Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Sorry about that. Hello and welcome, you amazing humans. Welcome to another episode of Mysteries with a History, where I'll take you on the wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions. Like you, I want answers. Today, we will be continuing going over the controversial Majestic 12 documents, the players, and the intrigue in the entire topic overall. I again want to preface this correctly, that this is old information. It's an old story, yet it seems very relevant to recent events concerning government transparency on the UFO topic. This is still all very new to me, and I know that even though a lot of this information has been available for a long time, there are so many young people like me who have recently entered into this amazing mystery who do not know about things such as MJ-12, and so that's why I am doing this here today, and I'm learning myself about the history and the mystery and spreading awareness to my younger audience of just exactly what this is all about. Before we get started, I want to bring in my extra special co-host, Mr. Jimmy Church.
Oh, hey.
Oh, sorry.
Everything okay?
Taco truck.
Are you snacking?
Okay. All right. Taco truck. What is up, Christina? How you doing?
I am doing swell. Well, I did want to preface before we also start that I'm in the middle of an electrical storm right now, and I've already had the power go off once, so I really hope it does not go out again and that no more water comes into the apartment, because I've already had that as an issue as well. So if the power goes out, guys, you know what happened. It's not the men in black. It's actually just the weather.
You've done a lot of prefacing during this
show. Seems like it.
Yeah, a lot of prefacing. A lot of prefacing. What is okay? Electrical storm.
Yeah, it's pretty insane right now.
Does that mean it's going to rain? That's the thing.
It has been raining. It has been raining.
Awesome. I love the. When I was a kid, didn't love the rain so much, right? Hold on. Then I moved to Panama, and we had rainy season like 6 or 7 months out of the year. Let me turn this down. And rained every single day, right? Okay, rainy season, but it was a warm rain, and it was awesome, man. Just playing in the rain, you had to deal with it. I learned to love it. Now, as an adult, I realize how precious rain is, and the day after it rains, or when it, you know, the sun comes out, maybe you had 3 days, but everything is green and alive, and I love it. When it rains, it doesn't rain enough. It just doesn't rain enough.
I agree with that. I've always loved the rain, but like where I am, it doesn't rain that much. So like when it does rain, I love it. I want to just sit outside, read a book, or just like literally just watch it pour down. It's amazing. Now, I want to start off with this topic, MJ12 part deux, as you wrote on Twitter. And you mentioned in the first episode, and for those that haven't watched it, I will place the link in the description box below for those that are watching it on YouTube. And you said that MJ12 and Majestic 12 are not the same. What's the difference?
It's two different events. Now, obviously, you have MJ, you have Majestic, Magic is
also one.
Another one. And that's right. It's similar. Looks the same. Of course, they're related. But the events are two different events. Okay, so Majestic 12 was a set of documents that arrived on film to Jamie Chandra's house in Burbank in, I think it was 1984, could be wrong, 83, 84. And that listed these 12 guys, okay, 12 people that were part of Majestic 12. MJ12 is a set of documents that happened later, and that's a huge stack of documents with the famous Twining memo and everything else. That is a whole separate, it's a separate incident. Okay, so Majestic 12 is the team of 12. Okay. MJ12 is a set of documents also involving the same people, but that came later and was revealed later as a document leak. And it's a whole series of documents with a series of dates. But we can come back to that. Okay, so that's the difference. Majestic 12, 12 people with knowledge of ET contact and the UFO subject. MJ12 is a document dump that came later.
And then what about the saying that goes for magic eyes only, or just the name magic? What's that about?
Yeah, you're so good. And look, everybody, don't take everything that I say as gospel. Because when you jump into any of these subjects, and magic eyes only is a great one. When you love the coffee mug, that's cool.
Thank you. I thought I would change it up today instead of black.
Yeah, this is what I drink out of during the day. It's alien vodka.
Oh, mine's just water. It's not as fun as yours.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway. All right. I don't drink. I just stop, everybody. Just a little. Okay. So when I make these statements, I've been looking into this stuff for a long time. And yes, there are a lot of documents out there that you'll see a magic eyes only stamp on it. I can't vouch for or back up or say anything to lead to credibility for any of this because I don't know. I don't have the final answer in any of this. And there's different spellings too as well. If there was an official magic eye stamp, I think that the government would have the same spelling on everything. And that magic eyes only stamp, it seems to appear again. I'm just the messenger, folks. Appears on stuff that has been proven as a hoaxed document. Not all of the documents are hoaxed, but if you see something with magic eyes only, somebody is getting creative in Photoshop, more than likely. Okay.
When I was doing my research and looking at Stanton Friedman, which we did talk about last week as well, and his involvement with MJ12, maybe I didn't look deep enough, but I didn't hear him talk about anything when it came to the stamp of Majestic Eyes Only. From when you used to know him, did he ever bring that up?
No, at least not to my memory, but I've spent way too much time sitting and talking with Stanton about this stuff. I mentioned this on the show last week. I talked to him a few times about MJ 12 and Majestic 12. And one of the reasons why I'm going to share this with everybody. This is the absolute truth. I would say Majestic 12 documents, right? And he would correct me. Jimmy, are you talking about MJ 12? Are you talking about Majestic 12? It's two different, you know, and so for Stanton, when you're jumping into these, you know, he has to know what you're talking about. And that's why I'm really glad that you pointed this out at the beginning, because that was something that Stanton, and by the way, everybody, Christine and I did not discuss this. I got corrected on this constantly. So I'm glad that you brought it up. And for those out there that are getting into this, maybe for the first time and going to look at these documents, and now you know the difference between Majestic 12 with a J and MJ 12. It's two different cases, two different incidents.
And not even I knew that. So I'm really happy that you were able to clarify it.
Yes. Yeah. Now, did I talk to him about the stamps? No, I did not. I did a couple of times sit down with Stanton and go through the documents the best that we could. He had copies of almost everything. And so if you went to a UFO conference, he had the Majestic 12 documents. He had MJ 12. He had Project Blue Book, you know, and everything was laid out, and I could sit down, and which I did do. I sat down with him with Project Blue Book and flipped every page and discussed everything for a couple of hours. Did the same thing with MJ 12.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. I mean, like, cool. I mean, yes, we should be sad that Stanton passed away, but overall, I'm just pissed. I'm just like, no, I should have met you. We should have talked. You need to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, he was so gracious with his time. He was such a cool guy. I want to stay on Majestic 12 and MJ 12, but I'll share a funny, I have pictures of this. I'll post him up in Twitter after the show today. One year we're at a conference. It was a contact in the desert. And, I don't know, it's probably five or six years ago. It was hot. It was like, this was one of those days in the desert. I'm not joking. It was like 120 degrees in the sun. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh my gosh. And no, I can't.
So, but fade to black, we had, you know, this really nice booth outside, with a tent, you know, thing. And then we had a cooler or coolers full of water and ice and drinks and stuff. And, you know, and we were the corner booth, right? Outside.
Oh, the best spot. Best spot to
right,
be.
Right. Okay. So, Stanton comes up and we had, when he comes up and he sits down, and where the sun was. Okay. So anyway, he comes in and sits down and he's sitting over here, but where the sun was, where the shadow, he was still in the sun, you know, the angle, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. He's still in the sun. And I'm sitting there talking. I'm not even thinking about it. He's got his baseball hat on, whatever it was, New York Jets or something. I'm not kidding. It was like a New York Jets hat. Anyway, he's like inching over, right? And I'm just sitting there rapping, and I look, and he's trying to lean into the shadow, right? I said, oh man, on all that I love. And the fader knots were there. We took pictures. It was great. I said, Stanton, you want to sit in the shade? I do.
he had the best kind of like dry humor.
He was so funny. And Stanton pulled over, sat in the booth. I said, you want some water? I do. And we sat there for like 2 or 3 hours that day, him and the fader knots, and it was the best of times. Anyway, Stanton was great, and I spent a lot of time with him, and I quizzed him up and down about MJ 12 and Majestic 12, and a lot of my opinions are based on the things that he told me, because I want to preface one thing. See, I'm prefacing. I want to preface one thing. I want to back up. Back in the early 90s, 1990.
Oh my gosh, I wasn't even born then.
I know. So this is a, you know, historical record here. But back then, things in the UFO community were happening at a breakneck speed, but we didn't have the internet. And so to share information, a lot of the stuff happened at conferences. But to stay up to date and, you know, the latest books and magazines and things, you had to go and chase this stuff down or attend a UFO conference. And one of the things that was breaking at that time was this whole Majestic 12, MJ-12 thing. And it was popping up in books. People were talking about it, but to get the real time updates or not, you had to go to a UFO conference. And then the internet happened. And so around 1994, 1995, the first thing that I and many did, you know, you jump on the net and you're searching UFOs and also MJ-12, the documents, and to see them and a couple of websites, the Woods, father and son, were doing a very extensive investigation into this. And it was every aspect of the documents, spelling, words, fonts, typewriters, names, places, dates, cross-checking information. Very extensive, probably the most complete investigation into Majestic 12 and MJ-12 that has ever been done on the internet. But that was also Stanton's reference point. So I suggest everybody go to their website. It's still there, and you can go and you can read all the documents complete, and you can look at all of their analysis on this. But I read everything. I went through every page. People can talk about MJ-12 today and Majestic 12 like they know what they're talking about. You've got to go and read every single page so you can have your own barometer, your own reference point as to what all of this means. Now, back to my point. So fast forward to hanging out with Stanton. Stanton went back and constantly referenced the Woods' work on this, and that it was of his opinion that the majority of these documents were created. Now, I'm talking about MJ-12. I'm not talking about Majestic 12. Again, remember, we're talking about two different things, same sources of people. But when you go and read through MJ-12, and that's a commitment, and it's going to take you a month to do that. But there are chunks of information in these documents that is real. It's authentic. That doesn't mean that the documents are real. And to the point here, let's say I shoot a video of a UFO, of this coffee lid, and I take it outside and I throw it in the air and I shoot a video on my cell phone, right? And I post it up. Well, it's a real video, but it's not a real video of a UFO, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's the same thing with these documents. Are the documents real? Yeah, they're documents. Are they hoaxed documents? That's two different things. And then is it disinformation? Is there real information in here to add legitimacy to the faked parts of this that is being used for disinformation? And I believe I mentioned this last week on the show, probably the most important part of all of this is that Richard Doty said to me personally, and others too, but Richard Doty was in the middle of this, as always, he said that the documents were created by the Air Force at the Pentagon. They came out of Washington, D.C. And the reason why he would know that is because Jamie Chandoray and his partner Bill Moore and Stanton Friedman was the third party here. Okay, so when they went out and did their press conference to announce these documents and to do all of it, Stanton Friedman was sitting at the table, you know, and was Stanton used? Absolutely. And I think now he's not with us anymore, but that he would say, yeah, I mean, I was the physicist UFO researcher, and I was on TV, and they used me. And I think that's a fair assessment. So back to my point, Bill Moore of those three was one of the tools of Richard Doty. Now, so what do we do with this now? And I was always uncomfortable with that, that these documents are surfacing, you know, from Bill Moore. Mm-hmm. You know, wait a minute here. Now, so when I asked Doty about this, both on Fade to Black and privately, he said, I assume that maybe Bill was creating these documents. And maybe him and Jamie Chandoray, and they had some help with somebody. Maybe Doty was giving them the information for this. And I asked him, and he said, no, that was always my theory over the years. He said, no, that the documents came from Washington, D.C., and were created there, where they had all of the information on Forrestal and Hill and Cotter and you know, all of the principals that were part of Majestic 12, and they knew their itineraries. They knew where Truman was. They knew where Eisenhower was. They knew where Forrestal was on these dates, places, and were able to put a timeline together, because the documents themselves cover probably about 15 years, maybe longer. So it's a long time span for these documents. But so that helps you a little bit with Majestic 12, what that is, MJ-12, the origin of the documents. And again, it was Stanton that, I remember my original point. Stanton saying, go to the Woods website. Just go there and read their analysis, because I depend on their analysis too as well. And I think it's pretty comprehensive. So, but that will help everybody try to, how do I say this? You know, wade through. It's a lot of documents. It's a lot of information. And if you're new to the UFO community, this is something that is a foundation of ufology, and it's a really good place to start. Oh, also, I wanted to say this.
I wanted to say you're going for it. There's all this is just flowing through your brain, and I'm not going to stop you. I mean, I just did, but
I appreciate that. But it's this: there are so many nuggets and points of information in these documents that is legit. What UFO crashes and possible retrievals and sightings and names and it's all laid out in there. And there are other documents that are referenced in there too as well that are legit. That are on the FBI's website and CIA
documents. Well, if everything was fake on those documents, then they could easily be brushed off as like, it's obviously fake information. But when you have a few nuggets, right? That's what really confuses people. It's the truth and the lies added together. If it's all lies, everyone's going to be like, man, you're just playing with me. That's obviously not true. And I would quickly like to say thank you for everyone that's watching right now, everyone in the live chat, all for the super chats and stickers. And Anonymous Rex says, great show, great guest. Off-topic question for you and Jimmy. Any thoughts on the 2019 Bainbridge Island Tic Tac event? And I'll answer that first. And I'll say, I've read some posts on Reddit about it, but not much in detail, so I can't really comment on that. But Jimmy, what about you?
I'm in the same position. I have asked others out there to to send me more info on it. Everybody seems to know about it. There's not a lot of information about it. So yeah,
I'm gonna know.
Yeah, but I would love anybody just pop something into Twitter for me at J Church Radio. You've got my email, jimmy@jimmychurchradio.com. If you've got anything to add to that for me, I would like to see it.
So, I want to see it too. Also share it to me in the email if you have any information, because you guys ask such amazing questions and it sucks when, you know, either myself or Jimmy can't answer it fully, just because there's so much information out there. It's hard to keep up with absolutely everything. John has a question. As always, thank you so much. And he says, great work, Christina. Got some questions for Mr. Elizondo. Also, he's been quiet lately, it seems. What do you and Jimmy think has been going on with him lately? Hopefully, his big news is huge and puts it in the NYT for many reasons. So when it comes to Lou, I know just as much as you do right now, but I know he will be coming on Friday at 6 p.m. PST on Shifting the Paradigm. So for those that want to watch that, please subscribe and hit the bell so that you do not miss that episode, because we all love Lou and we all are interested in what he has to say.
Yeah, I'm doing a thing with Lou this weekend. I spoke with him. Yesterday, I spoke with him the day before. I'm going to say this for Lou right now.
All righty.
He's telling me, no. He would like for me to say to everybody, hang on, buckle up.
Ooh.
Big things are about to happen. There's some information coming, and that's all. That's as far as I'm going to speak for Lou. He's going to be on with you this week. He's also going to do this conference with me. And now he's on with you on Friday.
Yeah, at
live
six.
At live.
It'll be live. It'll be live. Yeah.
Interesting.
He.
Interesting. Hold on. I thought him and I had a date 6 o'clock.
Well, obviously he dropped you for me.
Okay. All right. Let me.
And you also have Avi Loeb this week, which is going to be really exciting. I just had him on, and he's something else. He told me that he has done 1,100 interviews in just the last 6 months.
When I want to get back to Majestic 12. When I first interviewed Avi the first time, I can't remember when it was, but it was sometime last year. He goes, Jimmy, this is my 400th interview this week. And I was like, some crazy number like that, or in the last 2 weeks. But yeah, and most of his stuff, you know, is 2 minutes. So, you know, he's just going on, you know, to some network and jumping in. But yeah, he threw some crazy number out there to me. I'm like, man, that can't be right, man. I'm going to do some calculations on this later. But he was very in demand, and this Galileo project is a very big deal. So, okay. Inquire Within says both of our hairstyles are on point today. So I'll tell you something about Inquire. A couple of years ago, a band that I know really well is coming over from Europe to start their world tour. Okay, I'm not going to say who or what, but so and he's flipping out. Man, they're coming to me, man! I can't wait. I said, okay. Well, really? All right. You want to see him? What? I said, if you get on a plane, he's up in Washington. You get on a plane, you fly to LA, I'll get you set up.
No.
So he flew to LA. We ended up, I got him so hooked up. We started the day at soundcheck. He then goes to, meets the band, then goes to lunch with the singer. then hangs out in the dressing room all day with the band, all the way through to the concert backstage, to the post-concert show, and we were in the dressing room with the band. So we were with the band, never separated, from like 12 noon to 2 o'clock in the morning, and in downtown Los Angeles. And then we went and had, street hot dogs from Mexican carts at 2
a.m. Those are the best. I mean, look, food is honestly the best, the ones that come from carts and trucks.
I can safely say this for Enquire. That was one epic day. It was a lot of fun. I was worn out. Okay, so back to Majestic.
Thank you so much, Enquire. And Akashi, Chris, thank you so much for the super chat as well. All of you guys are absolutely amazing. You're really helping, supporting me, especially for being a college student with having flooding issues the last few days. So that's been interesting. But go ahead, Jimmy. What were you going to say about Majestic 12?
No. So what I wanted to do, and I always talk too much, but I want.
Well, we all love it.
Yeah, I want to throw this back at you for a second. What is it that you have learned from not only MJ12, the group, but as you start to dive into this and take a peek at the documents? You don't have to have read them all or anything, but what is it that you have learned and that you can tell your audience about? I would love to not only know that, but respond to it.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is, when you're reading the documents, right, with no background knowledge of really what's going on, what's true or what's not, it's really confusing. And it's kind of like, in a sense, like you're reading a science fiction book. Especially when I was reading the manual, I'm thinking, there is no way they would write a manual on this. This is absolutely insane. But at the same time, in present day, in 2021, it's not that all bizarre. From all the stories that we've heard, from all the witness accounts that we've read, seeing this manual, it's nothing that is out of the ordinary. But what time that it was written, right? And maybe someone that's reading it for the first time, even someone that's part of MJ12 or someone who got the leaked document as soon as it came out, it might kind of blow your mind thinking that it's absolutely crazy. So I was really lucky to, while doing research, finding those that have actually done thorough investigation on these MJ documents to understand and to see if these were real or an absolute hoax. And then I stumbled upon Stanton Freeman's work, because I knew who he was, but I didn't know his strong involvement with the documents. So I was looking at him. I truly admire his work. I like how he places evidence in front of him instead of opinion. So that made me value his opinions, right, or his evidence on these documents a lot more than maybe other people that say, oh, it's an absolute hoax because of ABC, without really giving any information. So for me, it was really confusing until I got to Stanton Freeman. But also having these conversations, you've opened up a lot of doors for me and for everyone that's probably watching to get a better understanding about what MJ12 is, because we can do all the research we want, right? And you're going to kind of lean to over one perspective. But when you start talking to someone else about it, literally anyone, you're going to have a different perspective on the things that you're researching. And maybe it might take you on a different path on what better to research.
Yes, and I am, and you're absolutely right. I was just looking up Bob Wood's website, and I'm going to find it here in a second. It's Dr. Robert Wood or Bob Wood, and I'm going to find his website so I can get that up there for everybody. That's the other part of this is this is what I always found extremely interesting about this, because I have a graphic design background, and that's what I went to school for.
There you go.
And you know, this is a number of years ago and before electricity. And so we had to do graphic design and layout and stuff happened in a very mechanical way. It took
a lot. It was harder in your time.
Well, we didn't have electricity.
So, but I know by looking at any document, whether it's something from today, right, or something vintage, or it's a flyer from a band, you know, whatever, poster, I can look at it. I can tell you when it was done, how it was done, what the typefaces are, and maybe some of the graphic designers from the past that influenced whoever did. I know these things. But when the documents came out, I'm not just your average guy or gal. I'm not. I can look at a document and tell you a lot about it. And for most people, all the way up through to today, they are looking at a document because it's a page with words on it. And they don't understand the formatting and the typefaces and how it was done and things. They don't. So you don't have that ability, that kind of discernment to look at something and fully understand what's going on. You can read the content. You can absorb that, its meaning and references. You can do that. But how was the document created? Now, when MJ-12 and Majestic 12 came out, I immediately looked at it in those contexts. That it is those documents, and I'm being serious, are nearly impossible to fake.
Okay? What gives that away?
Now, I'm not suggesting that they aren't fake. What I am saying is, to fake these documents, you are really good. Because you are typing this out on a typewriter. And back in those days, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, there were standards in formatting, how you laid out a page, how many indents you did, how many spaces in between a period and the continuation of a sentence, line spacing, the header, how it's formatted, how the date is written. Right. All of this is something that was standards. And unless you were, so you can't go down, you can't be 20 years old, 25 years old, 30 years old today and take out a typewriter and just start documents. You can't. You have to know how this stuff is formatted and done. Okay. There's that part. So I'm looking at this in order to create a page without any mistakes. Well, what? This isn't a Word document. This isn't something you're creating in your email where you can backspace, right? Cut and paste. You have to type everything correctly. You don't get a chance to. So this is what is key here. That means to get a stack of documents this tall, you've got in your room over here a stack of paper this tall where you had to start over, right? Right? You get to the end, the last word, and you mistype. Pull that thing out. Start over. So
that's dedication. If it's really a hoax, that is some real dedication.
Or a very professional document team creating this. Okay? With a professional typist, right? That legal typist that doesn't make mistakes, that understands formatting, that knows exactly how this was done in 1942, how it was done in 1947. Things changed by 1951, right? Things were typed differently in 1955. You have to understand all of this, and that was what was key for me. I went and looked at every page of these documents, And I would go back and look at a letter or some other document from that era and take a look at it. How was the date written? You know, what was the format? What was this? You can't use an IBM Selectric electric typewriter from 1975 to type a document from 1947. Can't do it. It's a different typeface. They strike differently. An old typewriter you would type, and this is, you have to understand, you could type out a whole sentence, but maybe the lowercase letter P was always out of place, right? So you would look at the whole, but it, you can't have a page that is perfectly without any mistakes in the typing in it anywhere. That's not the case. So I would look for those kinds of mistakes that typewriters did, and it's in those documents. It was very well done. I have come to the conclusion that these documents were created by the Air Force, by the Office of Special Investigations. They had a document team. They had a forensic team that was there that was able to lay out and design each era of when these documents were created. And they had a professional legal typist there to create these documents to make sure that they were done correctly. And there's another way to look at this. If you had General Twining or Eisenhower's secretary or General Twining's secretary or Forrestal's secretary, these women, or you know, some were men, were good. They were proud of their typing. They never made mistakes. They knew how to do a letter correctly. They knew how to do a proposal correctly. They knew how to do business format correctly. They knew everything, and they didn't make mistakes. Not like today. Nobody can type today. But back then, they were really, really, really good. And that's the type of typist that you would need to have come in and create these documents. And that's what was done. This wasn't done willy-nilly by a couple of schmoes at a Motel 6. But no, it was professionally done.
It would have to be, especially with all the documents that were created. Zofa, thank you so much. And they say, loving the shower. Well, maybe you're in the rain, but just kidding. Probably loving the show. Bob Lazar claimed his ID had Madge on it. There's speculation Majestic 12 may be called Zodiac, and the Zodiac has 12 signs. I'm really happy you brought that up. I think we just briefly talked about it last week, but I know Richard Dolan had talked about it with Engaging the Phenomenon, talking about how it's possible that MJ-12 did turn into Zodiac. Have you heard about that, Jimmy?
Yeah, I've been asked about this a few times. This seems to be something new in the UFO community, that this connection has been made with Majestic 12 and Zodiac. This is new to me. I, over the years, have never heard anything about that. But, okay, again, if anybody's got any information, send it to me. Back to, what was that? There was another part of that question, though.
Oh, it just said that Zodiac has 12 signs, right? And, you know, MJ-12 is 12 people.
Bob Lazar. Okay, so if you go to Bob Lazar ID tag, right, with this picture on it, and it does, it says M-A-J on it. I'm not going to make this a Bob Lazar show. We can do that next week. But that badge, I'm just going to go on the record now. I'm not here to break hearts. That badge was created by Bob Lazar. Okay, that wasn't a government badge.
Ooh, no. Dun, dun, dun.
No, no, no. Is there a way I can post it?
Post it? Not that I know of. You can share your screen if you have it. Also, thank you so much, Bob, for the $9.99 super sticker. Woohoo! Thank you. And John has another question. He says, also, what happened to the big NASA news from Mr. Greenwald today? The one with Bill Nelson, right? Because didn't he say he was going to get briefed?
Yes.
From NASA?
Okay. Now, I have it here. Now, how do I share? Okay. How do I share my screen?
Okay. At the bottom of your screen, it's going to say share, and it's going to have a little computer icon with a plus sign.
But I have three monitors. How do I choose which monitor? Okay.
It doesn't matter. You share it, and I'll allow access to it.
Oh, okay. So you can do that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hold on for a second. I'm going to hide. I got to hide some stuff. If you guys think you're
If you share your screen, you're able to pick just the tab and not your whole desktop.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Share that.
I don't see anything.
Oh, do I hit share?
Yeah, you hit share, and then it's going to show at the bottom for me, and I'll place it on the screen.
I'm a professional.
Obviously.
Okay. How do I? Okay, let's see. Share screen. Oh, there it is. It says share screen right on it. Okay. Boom. Okay. And then we're going to share this one.
Okay. Share. Oh, got it. Okay. Here we go. I think you can only share one screen at a time, but here is, it's up on the screen now.
Oh, man, all of my tabs are up there.
Do you want to take it off?
Oh man. If anybody took a picture of that screen, I'm going to jump through this camera and punch you in the throat. Let me see. Let me make sure.
So just pull it out. So just pull out that one tab out.
Phew.
Then you can. Okay. Should I share the screen?
Yeah. My advanced Lego master builder site was up and I pulled that down.
Okay. So I'm going to share it.
Let's see. Hold on. Alchemist, My Drive, Bookmarks, Booksmart. Warmoth guitars, Harley Davidson. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Go.
You gotta have the Harley in there. I respect that.
Yeah.
So here's how it looks.
Fake. Yeah, that's the fake one.
Interesting.
S4DSETLWX. US Department of Naval Intelligence. MAJ on the side. There you go. Okay, that's it. You can pull that down. Enough of Bob Lazar.
Okay. And then, so what do you think about, also what happened to the big NASA news from Mr. Greenwald today?
Well, that was a briefing. I think it's still going on. It's 3:00. I haven't heard the back part of it, which is the head of NASA was being briefed today, I believe, by the UAP task force, UAPs. Now, was he getting information from the task force, or was the task force getting information from him, or is it being shared both ways? That I don't know.
No, I don't know much about it either, but when I did see it, I was pretty excited to go ahead and read what was going on. So I'm happy that John was on top of it to let us know that it came out today.
What's John say on his Twitter? That's the question.
Right now? No, I don't know. But Chris Carter says, also, thank you so much. He says, love your show, Christina. Great subject today. I could listen to you talk all day. Keep up the great work.
See? It's all about you, Christina.
No, it says, you too. You too talk all day. The both of us.
No, I don't think it's T-W-O.
Yeah, it is T-W-O.
It is? It's T-W-O?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It says it right there. Because everyone loves you. Everyone watches Fade to Black. And here you talk all day.
Man. Okay. 9 hours ago, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson is about to have an interesting day. The story was updated a few times yesterday. I gave the Department of Defense a week to submit their answer. They didn't. I published NASA Administrator Bill Nelson scheduled for UAP briefing. Okay. Got no updates after that.
Oh, man.
So, tune in to Fade to Black tonight, and I'll give Greenwald a call. And
yeah, I tried to get him on today, but he's having some family things planned, so he wasn't able to make it. But he did have the invitation, and he did let me know that he couldn't make it this time. But that doesn't mean that next time he can maybe come and go ahead and talk about that a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, he played the family card with you.
No. See, I respect him. And I think family is the most important thing, more than your job, more than fame, more than fortune, is putting your family first. So I respect it.
I got to tell everybody. All right. I'm going to give everybody a little inside treat. So yesterday, I'm on the phone with Greenwald.
Oh, no. I'll tell you a story after that.
Okay. So I'm on the phone with Greenwald. And Christina texts me, hey, can you help me out with John Greenwald? I said, well, I just happened to be on the phone with him right now. And I'm live, and Greenwald's like, what's up? I said, man, Christina Gomez is trying to reach out. And he goes, okay, man, give her my cell. So I text, right? Give John a call in a couple of minutes. I'm on the phone with him. And so John and I were on the phone for like another half an hour. It wasn't 5 minutes. And he goes, man, I think Christina's calling me. I said, all right, man. And then we talked for like 10 more minutes. I said, dude, call Christina back. So so there you go.
Then when that happened, I called him. He missed the call. He called me. I missed the call. I called his landline phone. And then he canceled that to call me on his cell phone. And it was just this huge mess.
It was actually pretty funny, man. And I felt bad, as you know, because, I said, don't forget. All right. And boom, the next thing you know, him and I talked for another 20 minutes. I'm like, oh, man, you know, John, let's wrap this now. Okay. And don't forget to call Christina. Then we talk for another 10 minutes. He's like, man, I think she's calling me back. Dude, let's just hang up. It was pretty funny. So there's your, that's the audience gets a little taste of our day.
A little behind the scenes of what happens that for shows to work.
It was pretty funny. It's pretty funny. Okay. So now back to, let's stay on target.
Well, there's something I want to talk about and I want to hear your thoughts on. What I found really interesting about this whole fiasco right here is with one of the documents, right? It's a briefing for President Eisenhower, and he was briefed as soon as he won the election, but not when he entered the White House in February, right? So there was those few months, right, in November when he just won but wasn't in. Why do you think Majestic 12 or MJ-12, I already forgot the difference between the two, were so eager to brief him so quickly before even entering the White House?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to come back to that. Eisenhower. Okay. Got it right here.
All righty.
That's a good host has a pen. Is this, I want to go back to Bob Lazar for a second. When that ID card surfaced, it was when Majestic suddenly and Magic and different MJ, different forms of this started to spread around the UFO community. And not only the documents, but people were investigating and looking into it. And then all of a sudden, Lazar's ID says MAJ. And it's just like, okay. But that's how important Majestic was to the UFO community at that time. And he felt like, well, hey, you know, I'm going to fake me an ID card. If I throw MAJ on it, it's going to look legit.
It'd be legit.
Right. Okay, so that's my take on that, and I'm right. Okay, so back to Eisenhower. Back then, first off, Eisenhower was head of all of armed forces.
Right.
Before becoming president, he was a very heroic figure. We just came out of World War II, and here's Eisenhower, this not only just a strong, proud American, and it was awesome. But the UFO subject and the flying saucer subject and the cover up or not to cover up, all of this was new. It was new. And if you go back to that time in 1947, everything happened in rapid fire succession. It was too much to keep up with. Number one, the CIA was created in 1947. There was no CIA before 1947. The Air Force was created in 1947. Okay. Before that, it was the Army Air Force. So all of this, and Eisenhower being involved in the creation of things and moving forward, and that includes the Pentagon and different divisions.
Hold on that, Jimmy. And I'm sorry, but are you saying that Eisenhower was aware of the creation of the CIA during his time, right? During Truman's presidency?
Yeah, well, see, but that's what I'm trying to say. All of this was happening very, very quickly. So did the CIA, which before that was sort of a department that was created and run. We had spies in World War II, obviously. But But in the art of the cover up, so now we have the Air Force. Now we have was there an Office of Special Investigations for the Air Force in 1947? Was the art of the cover up and a way to keep stuff from the public? Was it these were being learned as we moved along? So, what was important for the president to know, or president to be to know, or the head of the military, which Eisenhower was? What did he need to know? And so we have a unique situation here of somebody that knows all of the military secrets. The creation of the CIA is going on under his watch, and now this person that knows everything about the atomic bomb, everything about everything that was so secret back then, Eisenhower knew. Now, what did he need to know as he moved in to the office of the president? Did he already have knowledge of ET? Did he know about Roswell? Did he know about what the FBI was looking into? The reports of crashes and retrievals. You had the 1952 UFO invasion over Washington, D.C. All of these things were happening around Eisenhower. So did he know? I would say that probably more than any other president in history, when he went into office, except for maybe George Bush, who was, you know, director of the CIA before becoming president. How much did Eisenhower know? I think he knew an awful lot. I really do. So yes, absolutely. And he knew how to ask the questions.
I'm really happy you answered my burning question. And also the fact that you brought up what happened in June, or was it July of 1952, when the saucers came over the White House. Could you imagine you're running for president and then you hear this news of something so bizarre, right? I think if it wasn't Eisenhower, someone with his kind of background, do you think if it wasn't him that they would probably back out after hearing what it is to be a president, having to deal with aliens?
Yes, and that's such a great point. Because, again, Eisenhower was unique among presidents, totally unique, because between 1940 and when he became president, but up until 1947, 46, 47. So those 7 years, him being the commander, right? Three-star, four-star, five-star general. That was the end. But before, you know what I mean? Okay. But he knew about advancements in radar technology. He knew about this. He watched propellers to jets. He watched normal conventional bombs through atomic weapons. He understood technology. He was all of the world's secrets were right there with Eisenhower. Absolutely. So when 1952 rolls around and we've got Andrews Air Force Base and their radar systems flying off the handle, two other radar installations at two other bases freaking out, he understands the importance of radar. And when they are saying, look, we are getting this on multiple screens, there are things flying over us right now. Something just flew from east to west inbound in the United States at over 7,000 miles an hour, back when the fastest plane was doing 400 miles an hour. Eisenhower knew the implications of all of this. He was a very unique president. So by the time he took office, when 1952 happened, he knows. He understands radar. He's been a part of this. He just went through World War II. And this was a very, very big deal in 1952. And
yeah, it was.
Again, he was a very unique president to be ahead of the greatest nation on earth and their military, and to go and win a world war that went on for 5 years. He understood all of this and what technology was. So, yes, was he briefed? He probably knew more than the briefers were briefing him on. I just want to preface and say that.
Probably kind of like smoldering when he's getting this briefing. But back to what happened with the saucers flying over the White House. I mean, I wonder what the deal was there. And I'm really happy we're talking about this, because was it like a show of force that these entities were flying over the White House, or some kind of statement like, you know, we are here, comply with our request, or we'll fly over here every single day. And then they flew over the house twice. It was a flap, right? So what do you think on that? And I wish more people would talk about this.
Yeah, it was a week apart. You know what? The crazy part about it is that there were press conferences. We had the military and General Ramey, and blah, blah, blah. It was General Sanford getting up there for the Air Force. The nation was freaking out. The first day of the sightings with the radar, we really didn't know how to respond. And we were freaking out and things, but people had to get notified. Remember, there isn't cell phones. You got to chase people down, and people
have to arrive,
right.
And, I just can't imagine.
But by the time they get to Andrews Air Force Base and they're in the flight control tower and looking at, it was over. So, okay, we're kind of on alert. Everybody's on edge. And it was a week later. They're back. And so, and when that happened, everybody was ready. Foomp. So they scrambled jets. They got all of the information that they could. There were no photographs taken.
I don't believe it.
No. Well, okay. But the image that most people see, which is the Capitol building.
Right.
With those lights above. That was a movie poster. That was a movie poster that was created. The photograph from like 1958. It was like 6 years later. The photograph itself appeared on, I think it was Fate magazine. And it was a photograph that was taken. And those lights that you see, that pattern, were the lights in the parking lot in front of the Capitol building reflecting in the camera. It's not that big of a deal. But there are people out there that will show you that photograph and go, see, man, they, you know, there was a photograph and it's right. No. Movie poster, cover of Fate magazine. And it was just reflections of the lights in the parking lot. So I'm not here to poo-poo on everything. 1952 happened. It was incredible. There is a documentary. From I think 1956, called UFO. Go and watch that documentary, because they do a very accurate recreation of the radar images and the statements that were made in the flight control center about what they were seeing and how jets were scrambled. It's pretty cool. And this was right after, you know, the event happened and it was still fresh. And they have all of the original, it's really well preserved, the press conferences with the Air Force at the Pentagon to the nation. So.
And while we're still on Eisenhower, there's something else I want to ask you. You know, in his farewell speech, right? And we've heard this countless times. He said, be aware of the military complex. What do you think he was referring to?
Exactly what he meant.
Well, do you also think it was referring to ETs, is what I'm trying to ask?
No. I that's not what I got out of that. I got out something much scarier. Look, I'm not scared of ET. I'm just not. I'm scared of us. Right? We are the issue here. So I think when we get into any of these areas, am I freaked out about, no, I'm honestly not. It's us that scares me. And what Eisenhower was saying is that the military industrial complex,
yeah,
has the ability to, functionally take over everything. They have the money, they have the manufacturing capabilities, They have the people, they have the manpower.
Well, do you think that could be because they have help from entities? Maybe?
Certainly that is something worth talking about. But I don't think E.T. it is in their best interest for us to kill each other. We have to advance and flourish as Earthlings. That's our contribution to the universe. If we blow ourselves up, you know, and we have a World War III and we have a nuclear war, it's over. It's done. That's it. All of the progress of 4.5 billion years of this planet is ended and won't restart for millions of years after all of the half-life nuclear radiation dissipates. And then we got to jumpstart life again on this planet. E.T. doesn't want that. So I think the involvement that E.T. has with our military today is definitely 100% making sure that we don't kill ourselves and we don't start shooting nuclear missiles at each other. I honestly believe that.
So could Majestic 12, if it existed, had oversight over the military industrial complex back when he said that?
Okay, so that opens up another door, and it's one that I think needs to be considered, which is, if there has been a crash retrieval of craft in the past, military industrial complexes, certainly they're going to go in, they're going to retrieve this, they're going to take it to a base and do with it what they will. Is there technology that they can use? Absolutely. They got to figure it out. Okay, so there's that part. The other part is, has E.T. met with Eisenhower, for example?
That's a big question.
And landed a craft, made an agreement, and said, you know, here's the keys to your flying saucer. We're giving this to you, and we would like 2 gallons of vitamin D milk. Okay. All right. So they get their milk. They fly away. And then we have an intact craft, maybe with an instruction manual. I think the military would be very interested in that. So that's a military industrial complex consideration in that. But the military industrial complex, as Eisenhower warned us about, was that don't let the MIC get too big. Don't let them become the bosses of you, because they can and they will if you let them. And that was the warning. And it was a stern message. It was very direct. I don't think any outgoing president said anything close to that in the past. The only thing that was obviously related to that was John Kennedy's statement that he made before he was assassinated about mm-hmm. secret societies and secret handshakes and these agreements that go on around the world in secret. And that was one of the most amazing statements to come from any head of state anywhere in history. But it was about two different issues. Kennedy, secret societies and secret handshakes. Wow. And then the previous president before Kennedy, Eisenhower, who said, as Kennedy's taking office, beware of the military industrial complex. Don't let them take control. And they will if you let them. How cool would it have been to be hanging out in 1960, right?
Wow. That'd be pretty awesome. And the outfits were on point at that time as well.
Oh, you ain't lying.
Oh man, I was, this is not even related, but I was like, sometimes I muse about it. Like, I wish I was born in the 1950s to enjoy the 60s and 70s and then like really rave during the 80s, because their music is like the best music of all time. 80s music. The 90s were like getting okay into fashion, and then the 2000s just kind of went downhill from there, honestly. So like, if you're born in the 50s or like early 60s, you live through some of the best and kind of some of the most interesting time.
Yeah, I'm even though I can say that, I lived through the 60s, I was still a kid. I was born in 63. So, but by the time 68 rolled around, 69, I'm 5'6". So I have some kind of memory. The 70s was insane. It was so much fun. But the crazy part about it is, I know I'm going to sound old here, but these revolutions were happening at such a fast pace. We went from literally, I'm not kidding, black and white TV to color TV. And it was like
fast.
It was just amazing. And so, it was right after that. All of this stuff, fashion changed. You went from this look of the 40s, 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s to long hair and blue jeans and the rock and roll and this change, disco and everything from the music from the 30s and 40s and 50s. It was all very similar. Suddenly, we went from like the Dark Ages to the Jet Age, seemingly overnight. And then by the time the 80s rolled around, it was cable television and MTV. And it was happening so fast.
Yeah, the technology was just booming out of nowhere, really. And then you had the internet just come right after that.
Yeah.
Pretty soon after.
It happened so quick. If you really want a trip on how fast things moved, if you were born in 1900 and you lived to the age of 70,
that
means you went from horses. Cars weren't even invented yet. You went from horses and gas lamps to Led Zeppelin. You went from horses to jet engines to rockets to the landing of the moon to Black Sabbath in one lifetime. It's like, holy crap. And you're only 70, right? You went from Bing Crosby to Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. How is that? I don't know. We leapfrogged over each other with this technology and knowledge and things. And to go from horses to the nuclear age and landing on the moon in one lifetime, how do you even understand that? How do you comprehend that? It was a crazy time. And so back to my point with all of this, UFOs were right in the middle. UFOs were right in the middle. Where were we contemplating ET in 1900? Not really, not really. And by the time 1947 happened and the word flying saucer is invented, we went from those thoughts to being space travelers ourselves in just a couple of decades. That's it. It happened so, so fast. And Eisenhower was in the middle of it. And I think he understood all aspects, not only of ET, but of technology and its implications and what it meant for humankind in general. And that's why I think he's one of the most important presidents that we have. So if he's going to give you this warning, what did it really mean? Because there was a lot going on in Eisenhower's head. A lot.
There had to be, especially when he was born, in the early 1900s, when there was still, when there was just still a horse and buggy, which is... Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. There is one more thing I want to hit on before we finish off today. This has been such a fantastic conversation. And last week, we briefly talked about the manual before we had to close up. And this manual I showed on my screen, and I'll see if I can share it again. But we briefly talked about it and how it kind of goes over getting crash retrievals, how to create disinformation out there when someone already comes out to the public saying, I definitely saw a flying saucer. And the book tells you how to discredit these people. You've read the manual, and overall, when you're just like briefly reading through it, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's legitimate? Do you think it's, you know, false? Or do you think it's just like something fun to read as a fiction book?
Right. I think that that manual, there's a possibility that what has been seen is the actual real thing. Okay. So I'm okay with that. But I believe that that definitely parts of that manual have been distributed amongst the military. 100, I absolutely, and government. I believe that. The verbiage, its references, it's done in military speak. Mm-hmm. It's done in government speak. And there has to be a plan in place. There has to be a plan in place. If our government and our military doesn't have a plan in place, they're not doing their job. Now, whether we know about it or not, okay, all right. But as an American citizen, as an earthling, right, as a citizen of this beautiful blue planet, we have to have a plan. I don't need to know, right? I don't need to know. I want you to stop right here on this page.
What it's showing you is
Psalm 101. And, this goes back to, are you controlling? You can do all of that with, your computer box. You can do, I don't know how to do anything. Anyway, so, this is what I'm talking about, when I refer to graphic design and typefaces. When this book was first leaked, that technology to do that kind of typesetting with those fonts and to get that set up, nobody had it. You had to go to a professional type house. You had to have a graphic designer. You had to have a CompuGraphic 1000, CompuGraphic 5000 typesetting machine to do that. You had to lay it out. You had to burn the plates. This wasn't created on a Word doc and printed out on an Epson printer that you got at Best Buy. That's not how this was done. This was a whole nother world. This was a professional situation. So that it just in of itself says to me that this is a real document. And I will stand by my assessment. I will stand by that, as crazy as it sounds. But Psalm 101 is some of the best reading that you can get out there.
And absolutely.
I would give everybody that advice. I remember I was taping a TV show, and we were at this soundstage in Hollywood and in Burbank, and I've got all these cameras in front of me, right, and these black screen, these cameras and people and lights and stuff, and I'm doing my thing. But one of the cameramen, his name's Dan, he goes, "Hey man." What do you think of Psalm 101? I said, well, what about, man, it's real, right? This is the cameraman. And I said, what do you know? He goes, man, I've got a copy of it. I said, out of all the documents out there, Psalm 101, to me, Special Operations Manual 1, Psalm 101 is as legit as can be. My eyes tell me it's real. I knew it, man. I knew it. But Psalm 101, I'm telling everybody listening to my voice, look it up, read every page. It's some of the best reading that you can get on the subject anywhere.
I think so. But also on top of that, it's definitely a fun read. It like you just want to devour it all. And in the index, it mentioned there was one on how handling and receiving crash retrievals and a whole chapter on dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities. that one was like a huge kicker for me. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I have to read. I ended up reading the manual like two or three times just because I found it so interesting. Again, regardless of if it's real or a hoax, just the reading is fascinating. And in 2021, it seems pretty legit. We've heard stories about it. We think we know how the government handles these situations, and it seemed pretty accurate, at least to me.
Well, if you ever want to find out how to dispose of an alien body, it's right there, page 16. But yeah, I'm telling you, it's great reading. It's great reading. I love it. And I think it's legit. I do. A manual like that has to exist. It has to. It just does. And I think that other forms of that have been around for a long time. I talked to somebody about 4 or 5 years ago. I don't want to waste time on this.
Go for it. Tell a story.
But it was somebody that told me that they had an older version or a newer version of the manual that mm-hmm. their father had given them. I take it back.
Okay.
It was at a conference and I got a copy of it. Uh-huh. I got a couple of pages. I got the cover. Now it's all coming back to me now. And so I'm sitting there and this person whose father was of note, you know, and he shows me his driver's license. I said, well, you guys got the same last name. Okay. All right. But then he opens up this folder, hands me in plastic the cover of the manual. And it was different, but the words on it were the same. I can't remember if it was older or newer. But just back to my point, that versions of this, did the Air Force have a version? The Navy have a version? The Marines, the Army, did they all have, you know, their own version of the manual with a different cover? Yes, that's where I'm going with this, that there were different, would the Coast Guard, you know, have
right.
a version of it? So yeah. I think it's legit. I do.
And it would only make sense to have different versions of it, especially if you are a part of the military and want to keep everything on the down low, right? Having multiple copies, it would really just make more sense. It really yeah. would.
Yeah. Tino just said it's all coming back to me now. It is. It's alien vodka, Tino. That's how you do this, is alien vodka.
Not human vodka because it's cool, too though, weak.
Isn't that pretty cool?
It is nice. Where'd you get it?
This was gifted to me. At a conference.
I can just imagine you leaving conferences with like backpacks of stuff that people give you.
Yeah, you know, that's I'll go on the record and just say it's really bleeping cool to have the gifts that come up. It just shows me that people listen to the show, they get me, and yeah. Yeah, I've had everything from Van Halen t-shirts to it's just lots of vodka, by the way. The gifts are just incredible. I've got so many that are sitting over there right now that I was going through earlier today. It's kind of funny. But this vodka sits here. And okay. Check this out. What?
All right, I'm looking. What is it?
I don't know.
It looks like string cheese on a piece of metal.
It's a sculpture. It's an alien sculpture.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that sits right here. Yeah.
You got some fun stuff in there, Jimmy. Yeah,
there's lots of stuff in here. This has been amazing. What we should do? Can I make a suggestion for the next show?
Okay.
What?
This is one time.
You had to think about it. You had to think. I'm busy next week. Have your agent call my agent. I'm gonna let you be agent. I'm gonna let you experience my agent Jeff. I'm gonna let you.
What were you gonna say, Jimmy? Go ahead and say it.
Bob Lazar. I think we should do Bob Lazar.
Oh, I'll have to think about it. I have to do my research. No. I have to do my research on it.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders?
Chicken. Prepare ship. Jimmy, you're amazing.
Only one man would dare give me the strawberry. Only one man.
Oh gosh, the best movie of all time, Spaceballs, is the best. People that haven't watched it, you need to watch it. That and Galaxy Quest that Jimmy recommended to me, I loved it. But Spaceballs, it is a must watch. If you are subscribed to this channel, you have to watch Spaceballs. Of Mel Brooks movies.
Yeah, all of Mel Brooks. No question about that.
Young if Frankenstein.
I can make a recommendation to everybody. I just watched. It's on Netflix.
The Green.
No. The Go-Go's. Oh my God. Christine, don't look at me with that blank look. Don't do it. Not now. Just nod your head. Yeah, the Go-Go's. Just go
The Go-Go's. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
This is the last time I come on this show. I'm not doing it anymore.
You already signed the contract.
The Go-Go's. The greatest all-female rock band in the history of the world. Belinda Carlisle. Charlotte Caffey. Right?
Yeah.
Jane. Right?
Anyways, I want to thank Jimmy so much for being here today.
You see what they're saying in the chat room? You see this? She got the beat. You guys know. The Go-Go's documentary that is on Netflix. I mean, I've always loved the Go-Go's. There's no question about it. But, oh my God, an incredible, in-depth documentary. It was just released. If you haven't seen it yet, go and watch it.
I'll watch it later.
I mean, I mean, just a phenomenal band that went from the start of a punk band to an absolute worldwide phenomenon of being the biggest act in the world that Christina has never heard of, by the way. And to see the struggles that they went through and the successes and how much fun they had along the way and the downsides.
But I'll watch it. I'll watch it just to make you proud.
Incredible documentary with a fantastic ending on it. But yeah. What about The Runaways? I agree. As a matter of fact, there's some shots in there of Jane and Belinda with Joan Jett back in the day. But yeah, absolutely. You guys are on top of it. All right.
Well, these guys know exactly what they're talking about. And I really want to say thank you so much, Jimmy, for coming onto the show. You always bring a fresh and fun new perspective to everything that I research. I want to thank everyone that's been in the chat today. I want to thank to all of my moderators that are doing the chop chop, as Jimmy likes to say. A huge thank you to my Patreon supporters, have been so awesome. Jimmy, where can they find you today and who's going to be your special guest?
Oh, tonight is Ronnie LeBlanc from Expedition Bigfoot, the hit TV show.
I've seen it.
Ronnie LeBlanc is great. And so he returns to Fade to Black. So that is tonight. JimmyChurchRadio.com, simple enough. And of course, follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Make the announcements there. And then tomorrow night, Avi Loeb. Thursday, I'm taking the night off. Yeah, taking the night off on Thursday. I got stuff to do. So there you go.
Thank you. Important stuff.
Christina, you're the best. I'll see you tonight on the show.
I will see you tonight. Have a good time. Be safe. Stay hydrated. And don't forget to eat your vegetables.
Time to go to ludicrous speed.
Bye, Jimmy.
See ya.
Oh my gosh, guys, always so much fun. And make sure to jump over to the Singularity Lab channel now for Michael Mataluni's class. I mean, not class, show. It's kind of like a class. You learn so much from watching these kinds of shows. So go ahead and jump over there. And if you want to continue this discussion, bring it to my Discord server and join me and over 280 others as a topic to debate on, to share knowledge, and to overall to have a really good time. So everyone, thank you for joining me. Thank you always to my wonderful Patreon supporters, for everyone giving super chats, for people just liking the channel, just even watching it. I mean, watching the show, but also liking the channel as well. And for sticking with me on this journey. And do not forget to like, subscribe, and share. Lastly, like I always say, keep your eyes on the skies.